From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The latest edition of the Gautier poll shows that none of the eight Democrats running for governor has a commanding lead, and that 4 months ahead of the primary, undecided polls higher than all the Democrats combined. Republican Governor Hogan remains popular, the poll finds, but less than half intend to vote to re-elect him. The poll probes what voters think of how Governor Hogan has distanced himself from President Trump, and it shows that more Marylanders expect the new federal tax law to raise their taxes than to lower them. Pollster Malia Cromer.
What I do think our numbers show, though, in regards to the tax law, is how, I think, little trust there is among Marylanders in terms of D.C. politics.
We talked to Cromer and political reporter Bill Zorzi on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Half of Maryland residents personally know someone who has been addicted to opioids. 7 out of 10 Marylanders think the state doesn't spend enough on education, and about half say it doesn't spend enough on public transportation. 6 out of 10 think Larry Hogan is doing a good job as governor. Those are a few of the findings released this week by the Gautier poll, conducted under the auspices of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center at Gautier. Malia Cromer directs the Gautier poll, and she's here in the studio. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And also here is Bill Zorzi, who covered Maryland government for 20-some years as a reporter and editor at the Baltimore Sun, took a break to participate in creating some television dramas, including The Wire and the HBO miniseries Show Me a Hero, and is now writing for the startup political website Maryland Matters. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks.
Malia Cromer, this morning's release of the Gautier poll focuses on the 2018 political races, in particular the Democratic primary for governor and the U.S. Senate race. What do you see as today's highlights?
I think the big highlight today is that the Maryland Democratic gubernatorial primary is really heavily undecided. So when we polled those 409 likely Democratic voters, we found that there really wasn't a front runner that shook out in terms of getting a large percent of the vote share. So with 47% undecided, we see Rashearm Baker picking up around 20%, followed by Kevin Kamenetz around 12, and then Ben Jealous at 10%.
And with this size sample, 409 likely Democratic voters, you have a margin of error of almost 5%, right?
About 5%, exactly.
So you can look at that list and say it looks like Rashearm Baker has some kind of a lead, but the others are really not differentiated.
That's exactly right. And so, yes, I think at this point in time, I think it's important to recognize the fact that Rashearm Baker has certainly made some inroads with Democratic voters. But at the same time, this race is anything but settled. And there is the June primary will come in both an instant, but it's also a lifetime away in politics. So with that much undecided, there's still a ton of time for fluctuation. It's going to be the real key will be is if any of the others, so the individuals who weren't able to muster in the double digits, and that's Rich Mattolino, Alec Ross, Chris Bringaraja, Jim Shea, if they're able over the next month or so to kick up their name recognition enough to start to be considered.
Bill Zorzi, what struck you about the poll?
As far as the horse race portion of the poll, the piece that was released today, I don't think there were any surprises for me, because I think it's still, in terms of the primary early, while it probably doesn't seem early to those of us who cover it or are in the midst of it every day, people, Marylanders, just have not focused on this election. And that's not unusual in itself. I think probably people will be shocked to learn that the primary is actually in June this year.
But June 26th is the date, right?
Yes, it is.
And obviously, somebody will end up at the top of the polling that day. But I'm curious as to what factors you think are going to be, each of you, going to be the biggest, make the biggest difference between now and then.
There are a couple of ways of looking at this. so far as measuring, you know, the numbers in poll-wise, I think money will have a lot to do with it and message will have a lot to do with it. But that doesn't necessarily translate to votes. It really, on election day, it will, I believe it will come down to who has the best ground game or who can get out the vote the best. Frequently, that is a matter of or a function of, you know, having an experienced politician or two on your ticket.
So, I want to ask you about that in a minute, but I want to ask Malia, what factor would you be watching to see how these numbers might change or clarify by June 26th?
I think it's important to figure out who actually can reach the largest cross-section of Democratic voters in the state. So what we've seen, I think, from September until now was really just a lot of these forums that, for the most part, are Democratic activists who, on a Wednesday night, want to go out and meet the Democratic candidates. And those voters, I don't think, are necessarily indicative of all the individuals that will turn out to vote in this primary election. So I think when you talk about money, the money translates into the ability to put radio ads, to put television ads, to pay staffers to go knock on doors, and to even send some mailers out. And we haven't seen any of that quite yet.
That's Malia Cromer, who directs the Goucher poll of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast, also with us, longtime political writer and observer, now writing for the startup website Maryland Matters, Bill Zorzi. Bill, next Tuesday is the deadline for primary candidates to pick their running mates, and you've been covering some of that. I think five already have chosen a running mate. Tell us about them.
Well, the people who haven't, I think people are sort of focused on Kevin Kamenetz, who was the Baltimore County executive, who has not yet picked the running mate. The others are fairly interesting. It's an interesting cross-section of folks. One of the people, Jim Shea, who is a lawyer, a Baltimore area lawyer, and was also the head of the Board of Regents of the University of Maryland system, picked Brandon Scott, who was an East Baltimore
the city councilman.
City councilman.
You find that interesting because?
I find it interesting because Brandon holds office at the moment, and he also probably has some sort of ground game ability to turn out the vote in Baltimore City. Of course, on the other hand, I don't know. Jim Shea is from Baltimore County, and the question of the geographic balance of that ticket is, I guess, still an open question. You know, ordinarily people would select a running mate from either Montgomery or Prince George's County.
For example, that's what Prince George's County Executive Richard Baker did in picking Elizabeth Embry.
Absolutely.
From Baltimore City.
Correct. On the other hand, you know, when you look at Elizabeth Embry's her track record when she ran for mayor against Catherine Pugh and others, including Sheila Dixon, she was only able to capture 15,000 votes. Now, it was a crowded primary, granted, but, you know, when you consider that Sheila Dixon had, who was, you know, viewed as kind of a marked candidate for her unfortunate handling of gift cards, she garnered three times that number of votes, 46,000 votes, compared to Embry's 15,000. And I hate to make this seem like a math game, but...
Well, ultimately, it is the number of votes that counts. Malia, you look like you want to jump in.
No, and I'm glad he brought up both Elizabeth Embry and Brandon Scott because I think that those are two of the best picks thus far. So for Brandon Scott, so yes, it might not be a huge geographic balance, but this is somebody who has deep roots in the Baltimore community. He's born and raised in Baltimore City. He's really well-liked here in Baltimore City. He's been both an activist and also a member of the city council. So if we're thinking about in terms of the math game, so what you need to piece together to win in such a crowded primary, doing really well in Baltimore City and Baltimore County could actually put you over the finish line. And so I think in Brandon Scott, in comparison to Jim Shea, you have an age difference, and it's also obviously a difference in race. So they're appealing to maybe perhaps different communities in different ways. And also the same thing with Elizabeth Embry. So while she might not have been able to garner, I think, a lot of support in terms of raw votes, I don't think anybody walked away from that campaign. And I say this as a Baltimore City resident, looking at Elizabeth Embry, although she might not have been the first choice, nobody had a negative view of her campaign. campaign. That she walked, I think people walked away with the idea that Elizabeth Embry was a competent campaigner, that she was a professional, and that she actually demonstrated an ability to raise money. If you remember, Elizabeth Embry definitely was one of the first to have ads on the airways in Baltimore City.
Bill, we haven't talked about Alec Ross's pick and Ben Jealous's pick.
Right. I didn't want to leave anybody out, actually, or Rich Mattalino's pick, who
That's
is
right.
LaWanda Jenkins. Ben Jealous, who is, I guess, is probably better well known on the national level than he is probably statewide. He has selected, and who was the first out of the box to do so, to select a running mate, picked Susan Turnbull, who was a former head of the Maryland Democratic Party. So that has some inherent pluses, I think.
It's the kind of balance we were talking about, racial balance, for example. She's white, he's black, but also she brings all these Democratic connections in Maryland when he hasn't really run in Maryland.
Right. Although, you know, I think he can find it on a map. But, I mean, he was the head of the NAACP, and which is headquartered here. Rich Mattalino, who is from Montgomery County, picked LaWanda Jenkins, who is from Baltimore City, now probably Owings Mills, I think. But she is sort of a bureaucrat, but well-known to state government. She worked for the last three Democratic governors. And Mattalino, of course, is a really sharp guy who is the vice chairman of Budget and Taxation, the Senate Budget and Taxation Committee, and has been around for a while. Alec Ross also picked someone this week, Julie Verratti from Montgomery County as well. She doesn't have any, to the best of my knowledge, any political experience per se, but she is an attorney, and I guess she's a craft brewer.
And businesswoman.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, right. Of course, Alec Ross doesn't have political experience either in terms of running for office himself.
No, not really. Although I think he has some experience in Washington, in the political realm.
He worked in the State Department for a long time. He's a policy guy. Malia?
So I think just going back really quickly to Rich Mattalino. So I think here is somebody that really has the opportunity. We talk about name recognition with the minimum wage is the bill that he has sponsored. And we pulled on the minimum wage on the recent Gautier poll, and it polls really, really well among Democrats. It has around an 80-something percent approval rating among Democrats, 66% Maryland statewide. And so if he's able, through this legislative session, to attach himself to an issue like that, if he can be the face of that issue, it would really certainly help to boost his name recognition, which is his issue right now. He's certainly qualified to run for governor. He has a deep understanding of the budget. I think it was a smart pick for his lieutenant governor, because he certainly doesn't need anybody to round out his policy background, which he definitely has.
We need to take a quick break here. Pollster Malia Cromer and political reporter Bill Zorzi are staying with us to talk about more politics, other insights from the poll. I'm Sheila Cast. I hope you'll stay with us, too.
On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this morning about the political landscape of Maryland as it heads into the 2018 election campaigns and some of the issues voters care about. I'm in studio with Malia Cromer, who directs the Gautier poll of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center, and Bill Zorzi, who brings long experience as a political reporter to writing for the startup website Maryland Matters. Malia Cromer, you found that 61% of Marylanders approve of Republican Governor Larry Hogan's job performance. He's also raised more money than any of those competing in the Democratic primary who would like to run against him. Game over?
I think it's far from game over, particularly in a blue state. His approval ratings are strong and stable. They have been this way since he's taken a public office. I think it's certainly notable for a Republican in a blue state. And particularly, I think it's nationwide notable. So along with Charlie Baker from Massachusetts, he's probably the most popular governor in the country right now. That being said, he only has a 47% reelect rate. So right now, against generic Democrat, Larry Hogan's at 47. Generic Democrat is at 43. So this gap between approval rating and reelect rate is something that political observers and certainly policy political insiders will be watching very, very closely. So if you start to slice and dice who makes up the gap between support those who support Governor Hogan in terms of his reelection and those who approve of the job he's doing, it's almost all Democrats. So again, it's Hogan's ability to re-piece together the Hogan Coalition, which is winning independence, strong turnout among Republicans, and breaking apart around 30-35% of Democrats is really his path to victory. That's why his path to victory is anything but certain.
Before I ask you about it, let me ask you, Bill Zorzi, whether you think that gap between approval and reelect is all about President Trump and President Trump's potential impact on how voters react in Maryland.
I think that's definitely a factor. Governor Hogan has been very good at distancing himself thus far from the goings-on in Washington. His administration has a very, very controlled message. Everything is, it strikes me just as an observer, pretty well orchestrated down there. They are very careful because I think Hogan knows and his administration knows and his political advisors know that he's walking a very fine line. Being a Republican who's not really identified with Trump, but could be, in a very blue state.
Malia, you polled this question of,
yes,
of how Governor Hogan is keeping a distance from Trump.
Right. So we actually have two questions in the Goucher poll because I think this is a really important issue. So we asked one about distance. Governor Hogan has distanced himself too much, too little, or about the right amount from President Trump. And the plurality of Marylanders say that he's distanced himself right that sweet spot, right about the right amount. But then we followed up with those individuals who said that they were going to vote in the general election. And we asked if President Trump, like their opinion towards President Trump, would have an effect on how they actually voted for the gubernatorial race. And 60% of voters say no or little effect versus 38% of voters had so say some or a lot. But then again, when you start to look at the Democrats, so we have 45% of Democrats say their opinions towards President Trump might have some effect, at least some effect, on their vote in the governor's race. And so his ability to continue to distance himself from Trump, and I think you bring up a really good point about the careful messaging versus how Donald Trump's messaging is. So I think that is one way to look at Larry Hogan and think about what a very disciplined politician, even his Twitter is disciplined. That's such an interesting contrast with President Trump. They may share the same party, but they are very different political animals.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Malia Cromer, who directs the Goucher poll of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center, and Bill Zorzi, who writes for the startup political website Maryland Matters. I was really struck by what you found about taxes, that more Maryland residents think their taxes will go up as a result of the new federal tax law that was backed by President Trump. More think they're going to pay more in taxes than think they'll get a tax cut. That has to really hurt incumbent Republicans, no?
I'm not sure. And that's if individuals make the connection between laws that are made at the federal level versus laws that are made here at the state level. And I do believe Larry Hogan, as well as the Democrats in the General Assembly, have both proposed pieces of legislation that could potentially address any sort of tax gap that is caused by the new federal tax laws. What I do think our numbers show, though, in regards to the tax law is how I think little trust there is among Marylanders in terms of D.C. politics. So the fact that 45% think that a new tax law will make their taxes increase, and then you can see that clear party divide with 52% of Democrats saying they think will increase versus only 26% of Republicans. There is really clearly something going on with a majority Democratic state really not trusting anything that's coming out of Washington, D.C.
The poll carries some interesting insights about the opioid epidemic.
Yes. 81%
say that you need medical help to kick a habit. Only 5% think you can kick addiction on your own. And 52% responded to your poll saying that they personally know someone who has been addicted to opioids. What kind of political impact do you think these numbers carry?
Well, I think first and foremost, this is an issue that knows no party lines. So it crosses it crosses racial demographics, it crosses party identification. We don't see a ton of variation here. I think this is one thing where you can see Democrats and Republicans come together. But I think the biggest thing that this number indicates to me is that individuals are starting to look at opioid addiction as a public health problem, a true full-blown public health problem in which you need medical attention to actually address. And so when you start to have above 50% of the population knowing somebody personally who's been affected and then recognizing that you can't beat this kind of addiction on your own, it calls for policies that are centered around medical attention and treatment rather than punishment.
You also ask about the state legislature and term limits. People are somewhat positive about the performance of the legislature, but they still want the terms of legislators limited.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing we see nationwide. So a lot of other polls have asked Americans if they would like to see Congress have term limits. And everybody likes the idea of terming out, you know, these long-term entrenched legislators or members of Congress. And we see the same thing happening here in Maryland. I doubt very much, and this is a great question for you, if you think there'd be a possibility this would actually muster strength through the Maryland General Assembly.
Well, I believe the governor has introduced or has at least talked about introducing legislation that would limit the terms of legislators. But if I were a betting man, and I've been known to be a betting man, I would say that this proposal is probably dead on arrival this year.
You have covered the legislature off and on for 30 years.
I'm sorry that you have to say that, but yeah, that's true.
Pretty much, and some of the leaders that are leading it now, you were covering back then as members of the legislature.
Well, the president of the Senate was the president of the Senate then as well, and Mike Bush, who was the Speaker of the House, was, I guess it was his freshman year when I started.
So is there any indication that the legislature would move to term limits?
I think that bill, if there is a bill, might get lost somewhere in someone's desk drawer between now and sine die. That would be my professional opinion.
Malia, the poll also gives some insight into what voters think about women in public office.
Absolutely. So we asked a question whether Marylanders thought Maryland would be governed better, governed worse, or it'd make no difference if more women were elected to serve in state government. And 47% of Marylanders say that Maryland would be governed better if more women were elected to serve versus 47% they say that would make no difference. Only 3% indicated that it would make things worse. I think important to note there's certainly a gender gap going on here. So around 58% of Maryland female voters think the place would be run better if women were in charge, or at least more women were elected.
And does that imply that a majority of men don't think so?
No, I don't think a majority of men don't think so. But again, 47% think it'll be governed better overall if more women were elected to serve in public office, which is interesting and reflective of a nationwide trend we see of more women starting to step into the arena of politics, running for these state legislative seats.
Well, I appreciate you both walking us through this. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Malia Cromer, who directs the Goucher Poll of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center, and Bill Zorzi, who brings long experience as a political reporter to writing for the startup political website Maryland Matters. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we've got links to the Goucher Poll and to Maryland Matters. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm glad you've been with us this morning. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.